Welcome back to episode number 2 of Stacktrace, a podcast where we talk about Apple news and rumors from a developer's perspective. I'm John Sundell.
And I'm Guy Rambo.
And I must say, I am really blown away by the amazing response to our first episode. What do you say, G? It was really cool to see so many people be so excited about the show and to be so supportive.
Yeah, it was very impressive. I love that subscribers count graph you showed me earlier today. That's amazing. Yeah. And we're so excited that we are doing the second one before we were supposed to.
Exactly. We were sitting down and we were like, okay, you know, Apple is going to do their education event. What is it, next week? And after that, we're like traveling and stuff. So we wouldn't really have time to discuss the event beforehand. So we just thought, you know, with all the amazing support that you have shown us, we just wanted to do one more episode. Just talk about the event and make some predictions and see where it goes. But before we get to that, we're going to start with some follow-up. And we have the first item here is pretty cool, I think. It's what happened was that before we announced the show, both of us, we said that we have something to announce today. I think you said, I have some exciting news to share today or something like that.
Yeah, we were teasing people on Twitter.
Exactly. And I was saying like, oh, I'm launching something new today. And Christoph Ginsburgs actually guessed what was going to happen. So he put one and two together that both you were launching something and I was launching something, which I think was pretty cool. So we're going to put a link to his tweet there in the show notes.
Yeah, he was very clever and he followed both of us. And I guess he connected the dots, as Steve would say.
Exactly. Great. We have some other follow-up here. We talked last episode about Springboard or Apple's many boards, and it turns out that Springboard is now split into multiple processes. So can you tell us a bit more about that, Guy?
Yeah, someone tipped me this. I knew this, kinda, but I didn't want to get into it in the previous episode to not like bore people with the details. But basically, Springboard is now... it had many more responsibilities than it does now, and they have been splitting it since iOS 6. And one of the very important components that's born of that split is Backboard, which is yet another board. And Backboard is a daemon. It has a Backboard D daemon, and it handles touch events, hardware, keyboards, orientation events, proximity sensor. So basically, events are handled by Backboard, because Springboard used to be basically the Windows server of iOS, and it's not that anymore. It's just quote unquote the main user interface for the home screen and all of its accessories. So there's this Backboard daemon now. And there's a very cool experiment that you can do. If you happen to have a jailbroken device, you can send a stop signal to Backboard D, and then everything you do on your phone, IOKit will register the events, but nothing will happen until you send the continue signal to Backboard D, and then the phone is going to do everything you did in sequence.
It's going to replay all of it.
It's very funny. I tried it, and it's kind of cool, nice demo you can do. So there's that. So Springboard has been split into multiple things. One of them is Backboard, and we'll probably explore this subject more deeply when we do another Apple Boards episode, I guess.
The Great Board Special.
Yeah.
That's I'm really looking forward to that episode. Awesome. We also talked last episode about UXKit, which is a cross-platform framework that Apple uses internally to build, for example, photos on both iOS and the Mac. It seems upon closer inspection that UXKit is a lot closer to UIKit than it is to AppKit.
Sure. I did some comparisons. I had never done this. I don't know why, but I decided to disassemble UXKit as it is currently on the latest macOS beta, and UIKit from the latest iOS simulator in beta, which is corresponding to iOS 11.3. And I did it for the simulator build because they use the same architecture as x86-64, so I can see the disassembly and it's pretty similar. But when you switch between the two, I even made a little GIF or GIF, if you're Casey Liz. And basically, it's the same implementation, that method in question. And it happens to be a method in UX collection view, which is equivalent to UI collection view. And I think we should bring up the subject of UI foundation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I told you about yesterday, I guess.
Yeah.
UI Foundation is not very well known by people, but it's a private framework on both iOS and the Mac that implements lots of underlying things that have to do with UI. So it implements NS font, UI font on iOS, NS attributed string and related stuff, NS layout manager, NS shadow, and it also implements collection view stuff, collection view internal data structures. There's a thing called NS collection view core, and even NS collection view flow layout is in there. So there's this UI foundation framework that's used to share some UI code between platforms, and an AppKit engineer on Twitter confirmed that the underlying implementation for collection views is exactly the same between the platforms. So that's a shared code base. So UI collection view and NS collection view are basically the same, but there are differences in the API still, but the underlying implementation is the same.
Yeah, that would make a ton of sense, because when you think about something like a UI collection view layout or auto layout constraints, that's really just math, right? It's just like computing layout attributes and computing positions and frames and rectangles. And it would make total sense for Apple to try to share as much of that code as possible, even though like the top level APIs are different, obviously, because, you know, you have NS views, you have, the Mac kind of experience and the UX and all the things that come with it. So I think this is really interesting, and it makes total sense that you would have like a layer underneath that is shared between both AppKit and UIKit.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And we had someone from the Photos app team at Apple told me something that's very, very interesting. So we have some backstory on UXKit. So apparently UXKit was born out of like one or two engineers at Apple that were frustrated with AppKit. So they decided to copy some of UIKit over to the Mac to make the Photos app for macOS. And it was intended to be just for that. So this person that told me this, the person told me that they don't believe UXKit will become anything else. They believe that it's just this that's going to be used for the Photos app, and that's it. But of course, they can't like confirm that that's the case. And I even told you that I think it doesn't mean much, because like Swift itself started as a side project. So I think it's possible that when looking at options of how to do this new UI framework for both platforms, UXKit would come up and would be an option, but not necessarily the one they would choose.
Yeah, at least it would act as an inspiration, right? It's like you've done something like this before, you might as well learn from it. And it would also explain a lot why UXKit is so much closer to UIKit. If the goal was to make a framework that is similar to UIKit but you could use on the Mac, then well, there you go.
And I think if we piece together the disassembly I made with the report from this person, we can pretty much say that UXKit is code that was copied and pasted from the UIKit code base, and just with some, of course, some adjustments to work on top of AppKit.
Lots of precompiler macros, probably.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, that's super interesting. Yeah, so I also think that they would probably not take something like UIXKit and just make that into this new kind of cross-platform framework, whatever it ends up becoming. But it's going to be interesting to see kind of at the end what similarities they have. And like we discussed last episode, kind of what kind of different metaphors they use for placing things in like the toolbar and the navigation bar. And UIXKit does a lot of that already, so it's going to be real interesting to see kind of what approach they end up taking in the end. All right, that's all the follow-up we have for this episode. If you want to contact us and remind us to bring something up in the follow-up section, or if you have some tip for us, then you can either contact us through Twitter. We're at StackTracePod on Twitter, or you can just go to StackTracePodcast.fm where there's links to email us and all other kinds of stuff. So let's move over now and talk about our big topic for this episode, which is Apple's announced March event. So it looks like Apple is going to host a event on the 27th of March, which is going to be focused around education. So of course, we want to speculate a little bit around what Apple is going to announce at this event. Is it going to be only about education, or are they going to sneak in some new product announcements? So Guy, do you want to do like a quick summary of what we know so far about this event?
Well, the event will take place at a high school in Chicago, so it's a little different than usual. They're not going to do it at Apple Park, so that's interesting.
They're taking a field trip, right?
Yeah, they're taking a field trip, and it's obviously focused on the education. They have explicitly said that. And I'm looking at the invitation. I don't know, what you think. People have been talking about the art for the WWDC 2018.
Yeah.
I think that means nothing, but this event art here with those lines that look hand-drawn and they talking about creativity. I don't know. It sounds to me like there's going to be some Apple Pencil stuff.
Yeah, that definitely looks drawn with an Apple Pencil. And I think the track record in general, if you were going to speculate about the art and about the invitations and this kind of stuff, the track record for an event being more relevant to what's actually going to be announced in terms of the artwork is much, much higher than WWDC. I mean, if we just look at like last year's WWDC, what was it? A bunch of like these little figures kind of holding hands and these little people. And, you know, doesn't have so much to do with WWDC itself. While the special events that Apple do, they sometimes, not always, but sometimes contain some little hints in the artwork or in the invitation as to what they will announce. And it's pretty clear from the text here that we're going to talk about education. But yeah, I also agree with you. It's if we're just going to go a little bit and speculate, it would be really cool if we saw some updates to the Apple Pencil or even the iPad hardware itself.
Let's think about what makes sense for an educational event in terms of iPads. I think we can say that iPads are due for an update, the regular ones, not the Pro ones. I don't think the Pro iPads would be suitable for a educational event, because education usually means getting the most affordable computers. So if we put together an education event with new iPads and something about Apple Pencil, maybe this means they're going to update the iPad line with non-Pro iPads that support the Pencil. Do you think that would make sense?
Yeah, it could make sense. In one regard, it would kind of make the iPad Pro lose one of its selling points. Because right now, if you want to use an Apple Pencil, you have to get an iPad Pro. But at the same time, we always see Apple do this where they take a feature and they implement it first in like the really high-end product, and then they let it trickle down to the lower end. And especially in education, I mean, there's so much competition from, for example, Google with their Chromebooks, which, you know, are really cheap comparatively to Apple hardware. This could be a way for Apple to bring maybe something more unique to the table, where it's like, okay, we are maybe not competing so much on price, because let's face it, Apple very rarely competes on price. And instead we can have like a, you know, more interactive, cool learning experience with the Apple Pencil.
Yeah, it would make sense. And some of that about leaving features to only high-end models, some of that is economical and it's constrained by supply, because I'm not sure what it takes to get an iPad to support Apple Pencil, but we could say that maybe the tech was too expensive to put in a normal iPad, and now it's not as expensive, so it could be done keeping Apple's margins and keeping the same price, but adding that new feature in there. They can always differentiate the Pro iPads in terms of raw performance and other features like the super fast display, and maybe in the far future OLED screens or something like that. So I think it would make sense for them to add Apple Pencil support to these educational iPads.
One thing we know for sure that the Apple Pencil requires, or at least the way it's implemented right now in the Pro, is it needs that higher 120 frames refresh rate, not in terms of refreshing the screen, but sampling touch input. So in order for you to be able to draw smoothly, the screen needs to sample touches at 120 or 120 times per second.
Yeah, 120 hertz. They probably need a better like touch controller to do that. That's probably more expensive.
Yeah, exactly. But it would be a really cool educational tool if we think about it. Like, there is a lot of things you can do, not only when it comes to drawing, but for example, like highlighting things in a textbook and you like using different types of exercises with a pen. One kind of problem I just think of when I just, you know, when we talk about this is, you know, adults lose their Apple Pencils all the time. Kids are probably going to also lose their Apple Pencils, maybe even more often. And these things are not cheap.
Yeah, they should probably do something about that.
Maybe they attach it with like a ball and chain to the iPad. At least one of these little, like, you pull out and it's like a wire, you know?
Yeah, handcuff the Apple Pencil to the iPad.
Do you think Johnny I would allow that?
Well, if the handcuffs were made out of aluminum, aluminium.
Right.
Yeah.
Then it might work. Cool. So it would be really cool to see some form of maybe lower cost Apple Pencil, an update to the baseline iPad as well. But you've done some spelunking like you always do.
I think we should adopt spelunking as our trigger word to have like a ding in the episode.
Yeah, right.
Every time we say that word.
It's probably going to happen multiple times per episode.
Yeah.
But you found something interesting when it comes to education. You found a private framework called ClassKit. So can you tell us a little bit about what is ClassKit? And there's also seems to be an app called ClassWorks.
Well, actually, the thing that's most interesting about ClassKit is that it's not private. It is in the public frameworks folder. So that obviously grabbed my attention when I did my regular spelunking process with iOS 11.3. It showed up on iOS 11.3 beta 2. So they added this ClassKit framework to the public frameworks folder, and I looked everywhere to see if there was any documentation about it, and there wasn't. So it's pretty clear to me that this is coming at this event, and there are also references to a new app called ClassWork, which looks like it's some sort of app that allows teachers to give students assignments remotely and like follow their progress remotely. So I'm really curious to see what it actually is and what apps can do when integrating with this ClassKit framework.
Do you think it's kind of the educational equivalent of ResearchKit, where you can easily build with ResearchKit, which Apple announced, I think it was last year, where you can basically run studies, like scientific studies and studies in medicine, on a big group of people and easily like gather the results. Do you think it's something like that where schools would like build their own implementations on top of it? Or do you think it's more like a kind of a publishing platform, more like something like, you know, iBooks?
for me, it definitely looks like the former, that it's some sort of developer API that allows developers to create custom apps that provide activities to this classwork app. And maybe we can speculate that this would allow someone that has an app that has to do with, I don't know, biology, could like develop biology activities that students can perform for, and the teachers can assign their students these biology questions, and they'll do the activities, and the teacher will follow the activities and how they're doing. It looks to me that it's something like that. I haven't looked into it enough to be able to say for sure that it's that, but it definitely sounds like it's something to that nature.
One kind of tendency we've been seeing with kind of the way Apple are structuring these things when it comes to like health and other things is that in HomeKit, for example, is that they will have these frameworks which will then in turn connect to like a central app, right? So you will implement like HomeKit, or you will implement HealthKit in your app, and that will like feed data into this like hub, like this app that acts as like a hub for all this data. And maybe ClassKit and ClassWork could work in a similar fashion where, you know, you as the app developer, you develop your classes and you develop materials, and that kind of then feeds into the kind of learning plan or, you know, the student portfolio in the ClassWork app.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting. I have the preferences screen for the ClassKit stuff. There are two different views for the preferences screen. There is the one for the teacher and the one for the student. So let me just read what they say.
Yeah.
So the student says something like, ClassWork records your progress in class. To get a complete view of your progress, use the ClassWork app. To stop sharing student progress with ClassWork, contact your school. So it's definitely something that's enrolled through the Apple school program.
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher view says, allow ClassWork to sync browsing history in ClassKit-enabled apps across your devices. And there's a switch that allows the teacher to choose whether they want to sync their browsing history in ClassKit-enabled apps or not. And there's an explanation that by allowing ClassWork to sync your browsing history in ClassKit-enabled apps, you can easily assign a recently viewed activity to students in ClassWork from any device.
Okay, so this is the teacher sharing their browsing history with the students, not vice versa.
Yeah, I guess the teacher will browse content and this will be collected in the ClassWork app so they can assign that content to students. That's mm-hmm. how it sounds like to me. But we only have a few more days to wait and to see what it's all about, and we'll see how close we came.
Yeah, exactly. All right, another thing that has been kind of central to Apple's education strategy lately is Apple Books, and especially the textbooks thing they rolled out a couple of years ago. So it seems that there's something brewing when it comes to Apple Books. They have been going a little bit back and forth in recent betas around the naming, and there also seems to be like a bigger redesign in the works. So Rambo, what have you found?
Originally, there was a report from Bloomberg. The report said something like the new Books app would contain a redesign similar to how the App Store was redesigned in iOS 11. And I later found some stuff when Apple renamed the app to Books in iOS 11.3. that suggested that this redesign was a true thing. So I found some assets and I noticed that this new design had a code name, Ganges, and this was disabled. It was hard-coded disabled for that build of the app.
Uh-huh.
And later on, they not only removed everything that I had found, but they completely reverted back the version of the app. So the version that had all the new redesign stuff in there was, I think, 5.0, and they just reverted it back to 4.6 or something.
Maybe they realized that it was a bit too early to start shipping that code in betas. It should have been kind of compiled out, because usually that's something we see where, I mean, it's also a technique that many of us use as third-party developers, where we start by kind of putting maybe some compiler flags around our code. If we don't even want to compile it in, it's in such an early state that we need to work on it a little bit more before we actually put it in the build. But then we might want to put it in under like a runtime feature flag, where we have the code in there and then we can activate it. For example, if a QA wants to test the new version of a feature. And it seems like Apple is also using the same kind of way of rolling new features out, where, you know, sometimes we're seeing code that probably should have been compiled out that is actually making its way into kind of the public-facing version of iOS.
That's basically what happened with the original HomePod firmware.
Yeah.
It had lots of Face ID code in there that shouldn't have been there. They should have removed that with compile flags. I remember there was even a bundle in there with the suffix underscore hide, all caps. So that was really funny. I need to find that tweet to put in the show notes. So yeah, this is a pretty common practice to add feature switches. And in this case, it was a feature switch that was hard-coded to false. So unfortunately for me, and fortunately for Apple, I guess, I couldn't enable it because it required binary patching, and that's kind of tricky. So yeah, so maybe they were scared that it would leak. Maybe they just decided to push it back to iOS 12 or something. But yeah, it's definitely something similar to the new App Store design, because even some of the classes, the class names were similar. I know the App Store uses classes that have like something swoosh view controller, and there was some swoosh things in iBooks. So it's definitely something similar, maybe even sharing some code. So there's that, and maybe we'll see this unveiled in this March 27th event.
Is that a sound you're supposed to make when you're scrolling the content in the App Store? Whoosh, swoosh.
Probably.
Yeah, but it would make total sense for them to unify these kind of designs. It seems that the App Store has been pretty well received by most users. I know that a lot of developers have been a little bit complaining about it because it doesn't show as much content on the screen anymore, which means like being actually featured, it means so much more these days. But for users, it seems to be quite nice, especially with the kind of stories that they present, and you can go in there every day, there's something new. So I'm sure that the overall feedback of the new App Store has been pretty positive. So it wouldn't surprise me if Apple chose to kind of bring this design language to more of their apps, maybe even videos also, maybe even the iTunes Store or Music Store, etc., to all of their kind of storefronts.
I love the new App Store. I browse it pretty much every day. I open it up to see what's featured. I have a test device that's set to the US region with a US App Store account. So I open the App Store on my iPhone 10 with my Brazilian account to see what's in the Today tab for Brazil. And then I do it for the US App Store. And I love browsing it. It's beautiful. The content is very well made. And I really think they did the right thing. As a developer, it hasn't affected me in a negative way, maybe even positively. I haven't been featured in this new App Store yet, but it's doing great for me, both as a developer and as a user. So I kind of love it.
Yeah, I agree. I really like the new App Store. I think it looks great. And for me also, it kind of shows the best of this new Apple design language, where you have these more working with animations and transitions between views. They're like collapsing as you're scrolling and coming in different ways. And also to add more depth to the UI with more shadows and things like that. It looks really, really nice.
It's a very sexy UI.
Exactly. So it would make total sense to bring that to the books store as well. And also with the name change also, I think, you know, makes total sense because now you have music, you have videos, well then why not have books as well? And it also has the nice side effect of opening up the iBook name for hardware again, right?
Hmm. What could that be?
Yeah, what could that be? I know that Jason Snell on Six Colors have had a lot of speculation about what that could be. Maybe like an iOS-powered laptop. We'll put a link in the show notes. We'll save that for a future episode, but I think that could be really exciting. I don't think it necessarily has anything to do with this renaming, though, because I think this is more to bring all the apps in line to just be these simple nouns like, you know, music, videos, books. Maybe App Store will even be renamed to apps.
I remember when I first started working on macOS stuff, people complained about mail that you had when you were searching for solutions or tips for the mail app on macOS. It was hard because you searched Google for mail and it never came with the right answer. But then people learned that they had to search for mail.app.
Right, exactly.
Because it didn't have a name. And back then, there was the calendar app was just iCal.
Uh-huh.
So it was easier to find. But the mail app, I know lots of people had trouble finding stuff for it.
Yeah.
But nowadays, like, if they call it Apple Books, it's definitely not an issue. You can just search for Apple Books and it's fine.
Yeah, but they usually don't put that name on the app icon. Like Apple Maps, for example, is just called Maps, right, on the home screen.
Yeah, there's a distinction between the app and the service. Like the app is music, the service is Apple Music. And with books,
oh, right.
The app is just books and the service is Apple Books.
Right, yeah, that makes sense. So when it comes to education, do we think that this kind of redesign has anything to do with that? Like, for example, the textbooks feature that Apple already provides where you can build these kind of more nice interactive textbooks for education. Do we think that Apple has something new up their sleeve in this area?
They could. They probably have something for that if they're revamping the whole Apple Books experience. But I don't have any concrete rumors or information about that.
I think if they do something with the Apple Pencil, like we discussed earlier, that could be a really cool opportunity. And especially if you have this class kit framework, and if, let's, you know, just speculate and say that the one feature of class kit is that it gives you kind of simpler building blocks to build, you know, educational content. If you put all these pieces together, you could, as a company who's kind of distributing educational textbooks, you could have an opportunity to much easier appify that kind of content and make it accessible on the iPad with the Apple Pencil.
Yeah, definitely.
So the next question is whether we're going to see any additional new hardware on this event. For me, it kind of doesn't make much sense for Apple to like introduce a whole bunch of new hardware in a high school. But, you know, you never know. You know, there can always be a surprise. So two products that are kind of up for a revamp, at least if you look at kind of, you know, where they are right now, is first off the MacBook Air. There's even been a rumor that the MacBook Air is going to have either a price drop or some form of refresh. So what do you think about that? Do you think we might see some form of new MacBook Air at this event?
Yeah, we might. And in terms of what I'd like to see, I'd like to see it have a Retina screen. And that's about it.
Wouldn't we all?
Yeah, I really think they should stop selling anything that doesn't have a Retina screen.
Yeah, so we can finally throw away our at 1x assets.
Yeah, that would be awesome. And
yeah.
Also, of course, it needs better processors and maybe USB-C ports, although those are kind of divisive. Not everyone likes them. I'm actually kind of liking having the USB ports.
Yeah, we can probably do a whole episode on just USB-C.
Yeah, maybe even like different colors have like a space gray version and a rose gold one like they do with the 12-inch MacBook.
The question I have about this rumor or, you know, whether Apple will refresh the MacBook Air in any way is how will it kind of fit into the product line? Because right now you have the 12-inch MacBook, which is kind of the thin and light, you know, single port, simple computer. And then you have the MacBook Pro, which, you know, has the whole USB-C, it has a Retina screen. I mean, the 12-inch has that as well, but is more expensive and more powerful. So if you would go Retina on the MacBook Air, bring it with new colors and kind of refresh it, maybe give it new ports, it just feels like, where does that fit in? You know, especially if it's going to be cheaper and aimed at education, like, why would anyone buy a MacBook or even maybe a MacBook Pro?
If you think about it, maybe it would make sense to just keep it in the product line and update it just to, like, use the name, if you know what I mean. Because there are so many people that are very much invested in the MacBook Air line, and they really want the MacBook Air. So maybe it would make sense for them to keep it around and upgrade it. I think if they're not going to update it, they should just kill that. But I've heard other people talk that it's a matter of price point.
That would make sense.
All of the other notebooks, if you look at the price, they're very expensive, especially if you think about educational customers. So maybe the Air could mean like the most affordable version of the MacBook.
Yeah, but shouldn't that be the MacBook though? Like the MacBook 12-inch, shouldn't that be like, because it's the least powerful one, it's, you know, small, light, simple. Shouldn't that ideally be like the base model?
They should just release a new one called MacBook Cheap.
Yeah, that sounds exactly like Apple. That sounds like totally something they would do.
Yeah.
Also, I kind of think, you know, if you think about, like, what is Apple trying to do here? Well, they obviously want to have something that they can sell to education. And, well, a lot of people in education probably buy the MacBook Air because, yeah, it's cheap. It's, you know, they're trying to get the most units for the least amount of money. But for me, when I think about that and I try to think about how Apple reasons about this, I always think that Apple is more pushing the iPad in this scenario instead of trying to push a Mac.
iPad is the future of computing or something like that. And what's a computer? Their message seems to suggest that iPad is the future and they are not going to invest in affordable, quote-unquote, regular computers. So maybe they should just kill the MacBook Air.
I think that's probably the long-term strategy, but the problem is probably that it continues to sell pretty well. I mean, otherwise it wouldn't be around anymore. Because, again, the product line, like it currently is, makes very little sense because you have a MacBook, a MacBook Pro, and they have a MacBook Air. Like, you know, it's
weird.
It's a little bit strange. Yeah,
let's not forget the MacBook Mini.
The MacBook Mini. That would be cool.
That would be a great name.
It's 6 inches. Oh, yeah, wait, that's an iPhone. iPhone Plus.
The Mac Mini is still selling, and that's like so funny because I don't remember when, but it was last year. Someone asked Tim Cook, and he basically said the Mac Mini is a product in our product line.
Yeah, that is a fact. All right, another product that is kind of due for an update. It doesn't have too much to do with education, I guess, but it still would just be interesting to speculate about. And that's the iPhone SE. Now, this is a phone that I see actually a lot of developers really liking. You know, it's simple, it's small, and I've seen quite a lot of my friends have the iPhone SE. What about you, Rambo? Do you ever see iPhone SEs in the wild?
I used the iPhone SE for a long time before I got my 7 Plus. It's a great device to this day. I think the interesting thing about the iPhone SE back when it was introduced is that it was a comparatively cheap iPhone compared to the other models, especially here, where all iPhones are very expensive. And it had the internals of the iPhone 6S. So it it had the internals and the power of an iPhone 6S with a much smaller screen, which meant it was super fast.
Yeah, exactly.
And it had great battery life. So it's a great device, even to this day. If you want to get an iPhone and you don't want to spend how much the other models cost, an iPhone SE is a very viable iPhone, even to this day. So if they upgrade it, it's definitely going to be an amazing device. And there are people who still love that form factor and the screen size, and they don't want a larger screen. So it would make sense for them to keep it around.
Yeah, absolutely. I personally don't think we're going to see it at this event, because for me, it just doesn't fit into the overall story. It could be like a one more thing kind of thing, but I really doubt it. But it would be really cool to see a new iPhone SE. Maybe in time for WWDC, it could be, although we very rarely have like any hardware announcements. Although now with the HomePod and the Mac Pro and all these things, maybe we could see a new iPhone SE at WWDC.
Well, let me just explain something. I posted a tweet with basically a list of what I was expecting to see from this event. And some people didn't understand, and I guess I wasn't clear. I didn't mean that all of the stuff that was on my list would be announced at the event. It's really common for Apple to like use a date to release a bunch of stuff or announce a bunch of stuff, even though it's not necessarily at the event itself.
Right.
So we could see like right after Tim Cook says, okay, thanks for coming and goodbye, the Apple website gets updated and they release like press releases with, hey, we're releasing a new iPhone SE. AirPower is now available for sale. We're going to talk about that in a bit. So that's what I meant with from the event. They usually take advantage of the date to do other stuff that's not at the event. Like for instance, the latest earnings call, Tim Cook announced that Apple Pay was coming to Brazil in the earnings call.
Yeah.
Which was completely unexpected. It was just a quick comment he made. But right after the call ended, the Apple website in Brazil was updated with the Apple Pay page, which wasn't there before. So they definitely use the dates to release multiple stuff and announce multiple stuff. So we can expect maybe some press release updating some devices, or maybe announcing that AirPower is finally going on sale. And maybe the developer website gets updated with documentation for the ClassKit framework. So that's all coordinated. And that's what I meant when I listed several hardware updates with this event, which, to be clear, I don't expect lots of hardware on the stage.
Yeah, that makes total sense. It might also kind of be a way to, you know, if the event is a little bit smaller, if the event maybe has more just education-focused announcements, to make it more, let's say, appealing for a wider range of press outlets to cover what was announced on the event, they might just throw a bunch of other things in there, right, in the press releases, so that more, you know, they get more coverage, basically.
Yeah, Apple knows that whenever they do an event, no matter how small it is, that the entire world is watching. So
yeah,
we don't know yet if there's going to be a streaming for this event. I expect that it will. But if they do, definitely like lots and lots of people are going to be watching, and press people from all around the world. So you can expect them to like add stuff that's more interesting to a broader audience, just to like keep people watching.
Yeah, exactly. It's a show after all.
Yeah.
We spoke about AirPower, and this is a really cool product, I think. I'm really excited about it. It's basically Apple's charging mat, where you can charge multiple wirelessly chargeable devices at the same time. So you've been digging around a little bit, and you've found some cool technical details about the animation that AirPower plays when you put your devices on it. Or the AirPower doesn't play it, your devices play the animation.
I was going to say that I don't care about any of that stuff. I only care about the animation, and that's why I'm going to get Air Power.
You just want to see the animation.
So, John, if you will just open the link that's in our show notes and play the little GIF or GIF, can you please describe to our listeners what it looks like?
It looks like a rotating phone and a rotating AirPods on the phone. It looks like magic, I would say.
In 3D.
In 3D.
That's the key here.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically, when you have an iOS device charging wirelessly using AirPower, it becomes like the screen for the AirPower device. So when you add other devices to AirPower, which apparently supports up to 3 devices, so your phone and other 2 devices, so when you drop your new AirPods with the wireless charging case, which will be released with the AirPower, it basically shows that your screen is black, and then a 3D version of AirPods with the case fly out in 3D, and the AirPods come out of the case and they fall down to basically a table view on screen, which shows the charging status, and that's just beautiful. That's the future.
Yeah, it looks really nice, and especially with the OLED screen on the iPhone X. When you have the phone be black and it like the screen doesn't light up, right? It just shows it there right on the screen. It's very nice.
Yeah, it's just beautiful. And some people were asking on Twitter how that works. Someone asked if the wallpaper that appears on the virtual iPhone screen when it's flying around in 3D, if that's your real wallpaper, the one you have set on your device.
Mm-hmm.
And I can confirm that it does use your actual wallpaper for the animation.
Oh, that's a nice detail.
Yeah, and I don't know, the person that asked me this was kind of in disbelief, but I wouldn't expect them to do any different. Like, that's the kind of detail that they usually pay attention to, like representing your device as it is in reality. So it reflects, it's a 3D model, and that animation uses a combination of video files, images, and SceneKit.
Oh, that's interesting.
It downloads assets from Apple's asset servers for the devices that have the 3D model and the whole 3D scene required to render the model on screen. And it modifies the model to have your wallpaper and does the animation, and then does all of the coordination to make sure that it flies back into the cell where it's going to show your charging status. So it's a really sophisticated thing.
So is the wallpaper like textured on the phone, which is a 3D model, or is the phone flying a movie and then your wallpaper is just kind of flying on top of that as a separate 3D object?
From what I've seen, the phone that flies is actually a 3D model, and they texture the model with your wallpaper. I'm not precisely sure about where they are using the movie files. Maybe it's for
maybe for the AirPods?
Yeah, maybe it's for a different mode, a different screen. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
They also use the video files for the proximity card when you open up your AirPods near your iPhone or your iPad. They show the proximity card that has the status, and they use movie files for that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they don't use the movie files for AirPower. But it's a really cool thing, and the interesting thing, and it kind of makes me a little bit worried, is that the component on iOS that's responsible for that animation has been removed from iOS. I think it was around 11.2 that they removed the component, and this could mean basically two things. One, they realized that AirPower was going to be released much later, and they shouldn't be shipping this for no reason. Two, they decided to ditch the cool animation, which would make me very sad.
Yeah, that will like you. They will lose you as a customer if they do that.
Yeah, I will not buy AirPower if it doesn't have the animations.
what you'll probably do is you'll extract all the assets from this old build that you have and you just build your own SceneKit scene that
well,
plays.
That's even more complicated because the actual 3D assets are not available in Apple servers yet. If they were, I would have made a jailbreak tweak that shows the animation for regular charging.
Yeah, even though you can just imagine that it's an air power mat underneath.
Yeah, I don't care about the mat. I only care about the animations.
I think it's really cool that we're seeing Apple use these kind of technologies like SpriteKit and SceneKit in different parts of the operating system. Like, for example, last WWDC, they talked about using SpriteKit for the Xcode debugger and things like that. Because one of my kind of main criticisms on these technologies, like SpriteKit, for example, and Game Center before that, were that they never really felt like they were getting all the love that they deserve because Apple weren't using them so much themselves. And it would kind of show where the quality wouldn't really be there. You know, there would be maybe performance problems and bugs. Because, you know, it's always like that. If you are not kind of dogfooding something that you make, it's very, very easy to kind of start neglecting it a little bit or miss some bugs or miss some performance problems. And I think it's really cool now that we're seeing Apple kind of get creative with these technologies that they have, even though they are maybe primarily for things like games or 3D rendering, but they are using them for things like onboarding screens and these kind of animations and debugger. I think that's really nice.
I think it's pretty clear that when they dog food their technology, it's a lot better than when they don't. Like, I can remember the iCloud core data fiasco. I think it was around 2014 that it happened. And it turned out that Apple didn't use iCloud core data for basically anything. So they were not using it themselves. And later on, I think it was the same year, they released CloudKit.
Yeah,
and CloudKit is used heavily within Apple. Mm-hmm. There's even this cool paper that we'll link in our show notes that talks about all of the technology behind CloudKit and how Apple is using it. And CloudKit is rock solid. It's a really cool technology, really, really good technology. And I think that shows, like, when Apple dog foods, they usually result in better APIs and better systems.
Yeah, and again, it's completely natural. It's like, you know, you can be the best programmer in the world, but if you're not a user of the kind of framework that you build, then it's so easy to miss these corner cases and miss just, like, you know, good API design in daily usage.
Or just miss the whole point. Like, you make
exactly.
An API that makes no sense for real world use because you're basing it on an idea you have in your head and not something you're doing for real.
Yeah, absolutely. The final thing that we might be seeing soon is the new AirPods charging case, which, you know, is rumored to come out at the same time as the AirPower. We've also been hearing some, you know, rumors and speculation about that we might be seeing new AirPods, like a second generation of the AirPods hardware itself. So what do you think about that?
I think we're going to see only the new charging case for now. I don't think they have the new AirPods quite ready yet. We have some really interesting rumors and reports from Bloomberg that say they are going to integrate health sensors on AirPods and they're going to do some really cool stuff with them. I don't think they would be ready now, but we are definitely sure that there's going to be new AirPods with a new charging case. I don't think they're going to have anything different in the AirPods themselves, only the wireless charging case.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I mean, the AirPods is still quite new, at least, like, it was very, very supply constrained in the beginning. I just recently got mine, so I don't really see it being like a product that really needs updating right now, or even, you know, it's feasible that Apple is going to update it right now. It seems to be something that's either coming later this year or maybe even early next year.
Yeah, that's probably it. I'm not going to change mine unless, like, they have something, like, amazing about the new ones.
Yeah, maybe they are wirelessly charging directly on the AirPower mat. So you're going to see a brand new animation if you have the new AirPods.
Maybe they'll have like the AirPods charge using your body heat or something.
That would be some really next level science fiction stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess that's all of our kind of speculation and thoughts about the upcoming Apple March event. We'll be watching for sure if there's a live stream. Hopefully there will be. And let's see kind of how our predictions will hold up. We're also going to do an episode after the event to talk about what kind of happened and if there's a new class kit framework, like how does that impact us as developers? Is that something we can take advantage of in our apps and how it works? Make sure to stay tuned for that upcoming episode. Until then, you can find us on Twitter. We're at StackTracePod. I'm also at John Sundell on Twitter. And Guy, you are at _inside. You can also find the show notes for this episode at StackTracePodcast.fm. So that's it for this episode. So say goodbye, Mr. Rambo.
Goodbye.